Welcome to the Iowa Blog. I'm your host, Craig Wynn. This is now part five of In the Garden. We have done a systematic analysis of what Yahweh had to say about his interactions with Adam, and now we're about to visit his creation of Chawa in the Garden of Eden. And the reason we have done this is manyfold. One of them is that, and this is perhaps the most important, in Yahweh's plan of events, he begins his relationship with us in the Gan Eden. And there he explains exactly what he cherishes, how he is going to interact with us, and establishes the rules for participation within his family. And we see what happens when we listen to God and do as he instructs, and what happens when we don't, particularly if we either misinterpret or misconstrue something that he has said. And the reason that this is important, just beyond the fact, isn't it nice to know what God intends, what he cares about? Isn't it nice to know what can get us into trouble and so that we can avoid it? Isn't it nice to know what God enjoys so we can do more of it? Well, beyond all of that, there's the realization that according to Yahweh's plan, we return to the garden. It is something I recognized very early on, almost 20 some odd years ago, that the whole story of Yah begins in the garden and it returns to the garden. Sukkah, the seventh of seven Moed Mikre, means to camp out with God. He is inviting us back to the garden. And when the prophets speak of the last days, they specifically say that Yahweh is restoring the earth such that it will be like Eden. And to do that, he must make it like Eden, which is to remove all traces of religion, politics, and militancy and conspiracy from the earth. So this is a prophetic picture of our eternity with God. That alone, of course, would be worth our time spent here. But also, there are so many nuances in this story, subtleties that tantalize our brains as we come to understand the brilliance of our God and his compassion for this relationship he seeks to develop with us. So this is now the part five, the fifth episode of our story in the garden. It begins with a, extraordinarily profound statement by Yahweh. Yahweh Almighty said, "It is not good for the man Adam to exist alone by himself." Now, before we read the next statement, think about that for a moment. What is it that should immediately pop into your mind as you read these words? Do you see something here that is extraordinary? It is not good for the man, Adam, to exist alone by himself. All right, I'll share it with you. Yahweh created humankind with a nefesh, a soul, something that we could use to recognize and observe our surroundings and then respond to it. Is the conveyor of our attributes and attitudes and personality. It's the only part of our existence that has meaning. And with a nesama, which was a conscience, a ability to discern right from wrong, good from bad, productive from counterproductive. And he made us unlike any other animal in this regard with a nesama, but also by design. There's lots of animals that are social. Dolphins, for example, are a very social animal. A sheep, for example, are also social animals. And there are animals that prefer to be totally isolated and alone. Snakes, for example, typically are isolated and alone. We were created to be upright, So not bowed down, the opposite of what religious bound does, to stand on our feet. We are really the only creature that is capable of continually walking upright on our feet. Yeah, I know that apes can do so, but for the most time, they're, you know, still down on all fours as opposed to just on their feet. We're it. That tells us that God wants us to stand up with him and walk with him, not bow down to him. We are an animal that has opposable thumbs. That's important because with opposable thumbs, we can use tools. And with opposable thumbs, we can use the greatest invention in human history. It's not the wheel, it's not the fire. The written word. We can write it. We can hold books and we can read it. And to a large extent, that is what these programs are designed to be. I've written 35 books. They're on the shelf at yadayah.com. They are all free. But you know something? Yahweh told me that the marginal utility of me writing the 36th book, Coming Home 4, which I'm writing, but I'm only writing it so I can share it with you on these programs. In fact, this very presentation in the garden and the one before the series in the beginning, they are actually from Coming Home Volume 4, which is unpublished. When most people go to the bookshelf on yadayah.com, it's just overwhelming. It's intimidating. I mean, who in the world has written 35 books all on these subjects pursuant to who God is or who he is not? And you show up there, and most people say, oh my God, it's intimidating. Where do I start? And rather than starting, they don't start. And the realization is now that if somebody were to devote 3 hours every evening, you know, they come home from work, they've taken care of their family, now it's their time to relax. And if they were to spend 3 hours every evening reading these books, you know, it takes 365 days to get to the end of them. We only have, 16 months left? In this phase of our mission on behalf of Yahweh? Yahweh said, you don't need to write another book. You've written the books. You've given people everything they could possibly need. And that was because I am now the books. I am the living repository of my translations and the insights and the commentary and that all I have learned on your behalf over the past 23 years. I am the books. I am the library. And so what I'm sharing with you is akin to me coming into your home, becoming a friend, earning your trust, and conveying the essence of God's message to you. That is what the Yahweh blog is all about. So, the first aspect of this is that God also created man so that we could use our tongues in such ways that we could pronounce words so that our hands, we could write them in books, we could read them, but also our vocal cords and our mouths and our structure of our mouths and the way we use our tongues and the like, we're able to communicate verbally using words. And he gave us the brain power to be able to do so and to process it and to come understand what these words mean and to make the necessary connections to deduce comprehension. This is a very unique capability of humankind, which means we can stand upon and grow beyond those who came before us. In my case, I didn't make any of this up. I'm not inventing any of it. Everything that I'm sharing with you was written between 2,500 years and 3,500 years ago. I've simply taken the time to look at the oldest source, translate it for you as accurately as possible, comprehend what is being said, share additional insights with you, explain the words, excuse me, more fully, and then deduce the insights that can be drawn making the connections and everything that has been said. So this is the essence of what we have been conveying. And when you realize that that is the sum total of our message, then we know precisely what God is saying here. Because now we're in what's called social media. So I can associate with you. Privately, you have invited me into your home with these programs. And we can develop a relationship. So you can come to look me in the eye, see my expressions, my gestures and all. And you can know this is a live stream. I am unedited. I'm sitting down before the camera in front of all of these lights, in front of this microphone, and it's just you and me. There's no editing. There's no do-overs. This is as real as it gets. And it's through social media. We're live streaming this on X, on Facebook, and on 3 YouTube channels, all at the same time. You can watch it on your computer, on your phone, on your television set, wherever you'd like. Because you know something, we're social animals. When Yahweh, about 2 months ago, told me, I don't want you to write another book. You've done a really fine job there, Mr. Verbosity. He didn't say that, but I can add it. He has a sense of humor. you've written enough books. Okay, already? Enough. What you need to do is look people in the eye and tell them what you know about me. And that's why we're here. And so this is a far more social outreach. It's not good for you to be alone. And think for a moment, was Adam really alone? No. Who was with Adam? Yahweh. The entire time, Yahweh was with him. Adam was never alone. But what Adam did not have is what I could not give to God's people. The social interaction that we have here. He needed another human to whom he could relate. Now, you look at God and this concept is really manifest all over the Torah. Let me give you a great example. Yahweh knew that his people had forgotten who he was, but they were being mistreated. And Mitzrayim and Egypt, the crucibles of human oppression, they were being beaten and they were enslaved. And life was not worth living. In fact, the Egyptians were beginning to perpetrate genocide against them. And Yahweh could have, if he had so decided, he could have gone into Mitzrayim, into Egypt. He could have obliterated every Egyptian. He could have destroyed all of their weapons. He could have released all of the shackles. He could have provided everything that a migrant people could ever want and taken them into the promised land. He could have even teleported them there. Poof. Welcome to the promised land. Milk and honey. Look at all these rivers. Isn't this cool? And he could have done it all on his own. Booming voice and all. But he didn't. Because it's not good for mankind to be alone. Even in God's presence. When the children of Israel finally, after lots of belly aching and religiosity and doing all manner of stupid stuff. All of which God, by the way, did not overlook. I know there's some of you who are responding to me on social media and saying, you know, I wish there wasn't this infighting that's going on now. Your video programs are the most remarkable thing I've ever experienced in my life. Thank you for doing them. But I really wish there wasn't this distraction out there with others that are trying to tear you down. But if you look at Yahweh's history, never once did he or those that worked with him back away from a fight unless their backing away was to show an example as to why we should never do that. When evil rises up in our midst, we have to confront it. So getting back to the story. So Yahweh has chosen Moshe to liberate his people. They work together to do that. He brings them back to Mount Chorib. And Yahweh now wants Moshe to be the conduit with whom he communicates his Torah teaching to his people. Not Yahweh directly, through Moshe again, an 80-year-old broken-down shepherd with a speech impediment. You know, maybe Yahweh likes people that don't have good diction. I guess I represent that statement sometimes. But that's what he chose. And so they're up there, they're getting it all together, they come down, and you know, the people are making a golden calf. Moshe has a conniption fit, he breaks the first set of tablets, they go back up for a redo. And the next time that they, after they come down a while, Yahweh says, I think it's important for you, Moshe, and for the children of Israel, to know that you're not making this up. You know, they see you go up there, lots of light show, and everything fancy, and they see you come back, and you're all aglow, and you're inspired with all this marvelous information. That should be enough, but I know it isn't for them. So, since I want you to be the conduit of this message for me, because it isn't good, even if I'm with the people themselves, even if they can see me on a daily basis as fire in a column cloud, even if they can see the miracles I'm performing all around them, even in that, it's not good for them to be alone. They need human contact, and particularly human contact that's conveying my message. And so Yahweh said, clean them all up. We'll get them all clean. And once we get them all cleaned up, I'm going to come down from this mountain and I'm going to speak for you directly to them. And I'm going to explain that, yes, you are my chosen implement and I am speaking through you. He did. Of course, the children of Israel said, go away, shut up. We never want to see you again or hear from you again. And you know what Yahweh said? I get it. I understand. I'm okay with that. Why? Because it's not good for man to be alone. If man only has the chance to be with God, we do not handle it well. We are a social creature. It's kind of like saying, I want to put the one lamb out there with the dolphin. It just isn't going to be satisfying for either of the two of them, even if the dolphin is the nicest, most benevolent dolphin in the history of dolphinry. Okay, it's a lousy metaphor. It's the best I could come up with at the moment. Yahweh, if he shows us even a billionth, trillionth, gazillionth of who he is too intimidating for us. That's not a relationship. That until we are enriched and empowered by the covenant and we shed these physical bodies and become spiritual beings, Yahweh's full presence is way overwhelming and intimidating for us. So that doesn't work. And if he dials himself down so that, you know, he is a voice inside of a fire or a pillar cloud, or he uses an avatar, or uses a malach, or something of that nature, it's not the same as having physical contact. You know, if you're one of the many that is living today in a broken relationship of some sort, you're alone, you don't have anybody that knows what you know, cares about what you care about, you're not getting along with children or spouse or parents or whatever it might be, you know what it's like to be alone, even if you're in somebody else's presence. And so Yahweh's approach has always been, I'm going to pick someone. He picked Noach. He picked Moshe. Of course, he picked Abraham and Sarah. And sometimes the people he picks aren't terrific. Sarah was. Abraham was not. Yishak, pretty good guy. Not totally, made some mistakes. Jacob, nah, not so much. This is just the reality. You look at Jacob's kids, yeah, most of them were bad. So God just picks a person that through whom he thinks he can communicate, somebody that will listen to him, will respond to what he has to say, will devote themselves with a sense of loyalty and steadfastness, that at least has enough gray material up there that they can process what he has to say, is willing to learn from him. And after you've learned from him, to share what it is that you've come to know. He wants to filter his knowledge through us to us. You look at the book of Devarim, for example. It's the most cited by far in the Torah. And yet, if you look at Bereshith, 100% of Bereshith is Yahweh's narrative. He was the only witness to any of these things, from creation to the flood to the formation of the covenant with Abraham, the whole thing, the development of the extended family. Yahweh was the only witness. It's a whole narrative of Yahweh. People don't cite it all that often. I mean, I'm the first person to really dig into the creation account and says, well, this every aspect of it is scientifically and spiritually accurate, and here's why. I was the first person to dig into the flood account and say, this is true, is scientifically accurate when you actually look what the words say, and here's the reason for it. Or to go into the creation account and say, let me give you some insights here, like what was said on the fourth day that is so profound to our understanding of God. But it's all Yahweh's narrative, and very little of it's understood. I was the first person to analyze Yahweh's narrative with Abraham so I could tell you what the five conditions and five benefits of the covenant have always been. No one else had ever done that. And so filtered through an individual who took the time to listen to God and then share what he had to say was profoundly important. And that's why I'm conveying this to you in these programs. This is the entire intent of it. Now, we go to Moshe. Yahweh's narrative in Genesis, Bereshith, is brilliant. But everybody wants to quote Devarim. 100% of Devarim is in Moshe's voice. It is Moshe having listened to what God said, processing it, thinking about it, and then responding and teaching us, guiding us, filtering really what he heard God say in a voice that we could relate to and understand. That's the message here. That is the message of God saying, it's not good for man to be by himself. La bad hu. Apart, separated, withdrawn, isolated. We need the human touch. We need somebody who has become exceedingly familiar with Yahweh, who Yahweh has helped teach, understand, and project and proclaim his message, looking us in the eye, talking to us as I'm doing for you. And that's one of the reasons why. And all of the prophets and Psalms, second only to the prophecies regarding what though David, the Son of God and the Messiah, our Savior, our returning King, has done and will do, there are more prophecies regarding what Yahweh has chosen me to do on your behalf, including what we're doing right at this moment, because it's not good for you to be on your own. So many people have written me and said, you know, I live in such and such a place. There's nobody that shares what I've come to understand. And I always say the same thing. Yahweh does. And he's there with you. Enjoy his company. But it's seldom enough. Now, I'm not even sure it was enough for me. I thought it was. I devoted my entire life to this, 12 to 14 hours a day, 6-7 days a week for 23 years. And yet, when I look at what I was able to achieve when I was in a terrible marriage, and even when I was apart and separated from all of that, there wasn't the passion or intensity that I have now. Yahweh recognizes it's not good for you to be alone. And so over there on the couch to my right is my lovely producer, who also happens to be my wife. And it profoundly changed my understanding and my devotion to this cause. She's Jewish. It was for God's people that I've always been called. And now I had a filter. I had a target audience. I could talk to my wife about these things that were so incredibly important. And for us to move to this island where there are no distractions, it's just the two of us. Well, you've seen our cute little fur faces. So there's more than the two of us, Wookiee and Asher. But this is our entire life. But this life is no longer alone. And to have that kind of love and focus and support enables me to pour out what I know and to look you in the eye and share this with you. And Yahweh said, it's not good for the man to be by himself. Knowing that Yahweh had spent every waking moment with Adam, what he was saying is that while we are in this state with physical form being so diminished from what Yahweh is, we need a human conduit. We need someone who can bring this message directly to us in a way that we can relate to and understand. And that's what we're doing now. The passage goes on to say, so I will engage and continually act on his behalf, producing a helper and supporter, one who assists and serves, a positive influence who provides benefits like his corresponding counterpart. What a wonderful, wonderful, magnificent gift. I think this is brilliant. Now, after presenting the tree of the knowledge of good and bad, Yahweh presents something that is so exceptionally good and beneficial. Not one, I don't even think in a billion people, fully appreciates what he's offering or why he was inclined to do so. I would go so far as to say, in this statement and in the next several, Yahweh has more clearly revealed his character and nature, particularly the relationship he desires with us, than every statement that has come before it. God genuinely cares for our well-being. He designed us and he knows what we need. And while the relationship is essential to him, Yahweh will not compel our participation. Therefore, we recognize that he created us as social beings, so that we would fit into, feel comfortable with, long for, enjoy, make contributions to a loving relationship. We were designed to thrive and grow in a covenant family setting. God knew that if we were isolated and alone, it would torture us. It would torment us. With only Adam, man, in the garden, he would cling to Yah, because the alternative would be unbearable psychologically. And so God did what was one of the hardest things I think he would ever do with us and for us. He began the process of offering his great love, Adam, the opportunity to love someone else, even instead of him. This affirmation that we can trust our Creator to do what is in our best interest, even when painful for him, makes Yahweh exceedingly kind and lovable. The only thing which could rival this in emotional anguish would include when 2,500 years later, Yahweh led the children of Israel out of slavery. And then he had to listen to him or them tell him that they never wanted to see him or hear from him again. And so all of that time, Yahweh has not revealed himself to anyone apart from his prophets and selected witnesses. And there have been very, very few of them. It is our job then to share what we have come to know with you. To resolve this problem, and with the passage of another 500 years, he would listen to and accept his son's plea. It was an exceptional discussion. I would have loved to have actually heard it when Dode came to recognize that it was necessary and appropriate for him to serve as the Passover lamb. 1,000 years later, he experienced the anguish of Roman torture. And Yahweh had to witness his beloved son, who had volunteered for this mission, endure separation from him on matzah, all for our collective benefit. Great pain and anguish for the father, all for a very, very distant, prolonged benefit for us, because there is no one for almost 2,000 years after Dode made this sacrifice, or for most of the 1,000 years after he announced that he was going to do it, that capitalized upon it, rather than accepting and celebrating and benefiting what Dode had volunteered to do and Yahweh had enabled for our benefit. His own people negated it. Paul would create a crude counterfeit named Jesus Christ to rob everything that they had achieved. And Rabbi Akiva, the father of rabbinic Judaism, fought a lie with another lie and foisted Bar Kokhba on the people. Can you imagine the anguish of God knowing that he and his son had made this tremendous sacrifice? Only for us, for humankind, for a better part of 2,000 years to spit in his face, to negate it, to trash him, to denounce him, to replace him, to erase his name, to give his titles to a goddamn myth. But God is so good, so long-suffering, that he allowed this to happen because he knew one day that would change. That day is today. Because now I can come in your homes. I can look you in the eye. I can tell you the truth. You are now able to capitalize and celebrate and enjoy the benefits that Father and Son accomplished for you. And you can do it before it's too late, before Yahweh returns, so there can be a joyous homecoming and family reunion, beginning on Teruah and then Yom Kippurim and Sukkah, so that we can return to the Garden of Eden. That is a life well lived. That is exactly what Yahweh is offering. Our Heavenly Father, yes, watched the men he had created to love him despise he and his son to such an extent that they not only erased his name and created religions to false gods by replacing and counterfeiting his chosen one's sacrifice. These are among the many reasons we can trust Yahweh and should love him, that the actual God who has revealed himself to us is magnanimous and magnificent. He bears nothing in common with the cheap counterfeits that are worshipped in religion. Not one of those that he has created have considered, prior to this writing, prior to this speaking to you, even after the passage of nearly 2,000 years after these traumatic events played out, the greatest gift, the greatest discovery ever in human history. Now, there are those, Facebook is a really, and X, and to some degree, YouTube is not quite as interactive as the other two. There's a whole group of people that came on, a couple of people that came on, three, Facebook today that were insistent that that my claim that I am the voice of God today, that I speak for him, I am his choder, I am his nakar, I'm his nakri, I'm his coal voice, I am the final of the three Zoroa, that is presumptuous, and since you're, I'm not a prophet, I've admitted I'm not a prophet, in fact, it would be foolish for me to be a prophet. God was smart enough not to make me a prophet because it would be counter to his purpose at this time, that you can't speak for God, therefore. And yet, there are hundreds upon hundreds of prophecies where Yahweh says exactly the opposite. And there are the 35 books on the shelf with many thousands of previously unheralded insights which say just the opposite. There is these programs where no one on the planet can do what I'm doing with you now. I mean, the living manifestation of all that we have learned about the most amazing truths ever to be heralded in human history. I would trust what God has to say. It is your in your interest. And when you consider the alternative, the world's falling apart. The world hasn't known and responded effectively to God for a better part of 3,000 years. Maybe for fully 3,000 years since someone responded appropriately to God. The world's been religious. God hates religion. The world's been political. God hates politics. The world has been conspiratorial. You know, it despises that. It has been militant. He doesn't care for that either. And the world right now is devolving. I mean, it's crashing. This alliance between progressive libertards and Muslims is the most deadly and destructive in human history. The world has gone mad in its rage against God's people, even though they were victimized and they are defending themselves. If you listen to the world voice, you would think it's just the opposite. The world's gone mad. You know, you just had the president of the United States, the man just sworn in, sent an envoy that was owned and operated by Qatar to demand that Israel capitulate. Yeah. Witkoff, the man he sent, was given a $623 million bribe by the Qataris, and he paid that debt with Jewish lives, forcing Israel to capitulate, making it insanely vulnerable. And Trump himself will pay his debt. His son-in-law, Kushner, was given $2 billion by the Saudis. Who knows how much Trump has been promised? And he's going to pay that debt by giving Saudi Arabia Israel with the two-state dissolution. This is where we're headed. The world is literally falling apart before our eyes. So you ought to know that the status quo, continuing to do what everyone had done previously, did not work. So maybe it's time to listen. Maybe it's time to invite Yahweh back into your lives. Maybe it's time to listen to him, particularly to the chosen voice that Yahweh is presenting. Maybe it's time to acknowledge Dod as your Messiah and King. Maybe it's time to appreciate the conditions and the benefits of the bereft and the timing and the, well, the blessings that God has provided through his Moed Mikre, when they will be fulfilled, when they were fulfilled, what each of them means and represents, all of which was first presented here. Yahweh was not considered by name prior to these writings. His son was not acknowledged by title or by his accolades prior to this writing. No one had any appreciation for the fact that the Christian myth was piled directly on top of the truth. And by piling their lies on top of the truth, they hid the truth about what Dode had accomplished from the world for nearly 2,000 years. No one had previously acknowledged that Rabbi Akiva fought the counterfeit Messiah of Christianity with a counterfeit Messiah of his own, or what the consequence of that was. These are profound, profound realizations. It hurts God that we've gone so long without accepting the truth. And now his joy is knowing that why it may only be one in a million of you, that there are those of you now where the truth is taking root and resonating within your hearts, within your minds, and you're celebrating your knowledge, understanding, and relationship with Yahweh. You are no longer alone. The covenant relationship was intended to be rewarding for God, and even better for mankind. And for this purpose, we were conceived to reflect its attributes. Therefore, God had only two options. He could either dominate Adam's time and be with him every waking moment of every day, or he could provide an alternative company for him. And since we know the decision he made that he just announced here, the fact that he was willing to share the man he had worked so hard, so long to conceive, you know, it was really better part of 14 billion years in earth time until he was in the position to do this. Well, it speaks volumes about his character. Further, when we consider how attractive God made the alternative, how perfectly woman was designed for man, we get a glimpse at God's generosity, his artistry, and his capacity to love. It should actually be obvious that man is nothing without woman. My loving wife is supporting me again. She knows that I have a tickle on my throat, and the best way for me to resolve it is to have a cup of tea with you. And so she just freshened my glass, if you want to know why it's larger than it previously was. But again, I've got to be relaxed in front of you. If I'm going to sit down in front of this camera, in front of this microphone, and talk to you for an hour at a time, we have to be relaxed together. You need to know this is very real. So, without woman, man is nothing. That's why it's so hurtful to me, as I have written the 5 books on Islam, you know, 4,200 pages of documentation to demonstrate that Allah is not God and that Muhammad was not a prophet, that Islam is so hostile to women. It also breaks my heart to see progressive libertards siding with Islam, knowing that it's so misogynistic and so hostile again to women, so deprivating to them. Muhammad was a rapist. He was a pedophile. He put women in tents. He deprived them of their rights. The Quran renders women with as really nothing but animals to to please men. You know, heaven is nothing but perpetual virgins for men to conquer. It is a repulsive scenario. And so it is really sad to see that when the fact is we're nothing without woman. I mean, my life would be so less meaningful without the woman in my life. And truly, we can't reproduce, we can't make life unless we're together. We can't nurture life unless we're together. And we're together and we support each other with our differences and our mutual gifts. And life is so much meaningful, productive, loving, compassionate, enjoyable. The woman, therefore, would be an essential gift and a blessing, not unlike the gift of Yahweh's beloved son, Dode, to us as he fulfilled the Moed Mikre. Now, also relevant for humankind to appreciate the intent of the covenant, we would need to experience love, home, and family in a cohesive and collaborative whole. While the woman could provide Adam with tremendous happiness, even apart from Yahweh, that is not all that this offer of assistance represents. The concluding statement does not actually say that Yahweh made someone for Adam. By using Asha Lahu, God actually confessed that he engaged on Adam's behalf, acting in his interests, Adam's interests. Asha means that God went to work for the benefit of this man, thereby serving him. And when spoken in the called imperfect, it means that his labors on Adam's behalf were genuine and ongoing. Further, by coupling Asha with Izir, we are presented with a picture of God in one of his favorite roles as our helper and supporter. Yahweh was assisting and serving man, and he does that throughout his story. Yeah, Moshe was his co-worker. Dod was his co-worker. But they did not work alone every step of the way. When these great Zoroah worked with Yahweh, Yahweh served them. He supported them. He equipped them to do this job. So Yahweh was assisting and serving man. His willingness to Izir positively influence, rescue, and renew, aid and benefit Adam would be neged, straightforward, right in front of us, open and available for us to see, transpiring in our immediate proximity. It is the antidote for religion. In religion, man serves God. No, God serves man. Fathers serve their children. That is God's message. That is his purpose. That is what he wants to achieve. Perhaps in this way, Yahweh is using the feminine manifestation of support and assistance as a metaphor for someone who is also, you know, vital to our transformation from being physical beings to energy-based beings, the set-apart spirit. And the set-apart spirit has the strength and the power to accomplish whatever is needed to help us become all we were intended to be. The set-apart spirit is Yahweh, not a separate persona, not a distinct aspect of Yahweh. Set-apart spirit is Yahweh. Yahweh has a nephesh soul. He has a ruach spirit. And he can kodesh, set apart, his spirit to serve his interests. He uses his spirit to accomplish certain things, like, for example, right before his return, he says the spirit of reconciliation and mercy is going to flood over Jerusalem. This is right before Father and Son return. And you might say, well, that must be a spiritual awakening. No, it isn't. Yeah, well, is using his spirit such that those who benefit from, well, that's going to be my sacrifice, is the Adam of Parah on Teruah, receive the benefit, that they have a way of appreciating and capitalizing on what's being done. Yahweh says that his spirit came upon Dod when he was 8 years old, as he was anointed on God's instructions. We read Yeshaya 11, which is the most explicit presentation of the spirit. And there we find out the spirit isn't even one, that Yahweh has seven spirits. And that the seven spirits of Yahweh, including the spirit of Yahweh, has enlightened, has enabled, has impassioned, has enhanced the comprehension of, the wisdom of, and has enabled the communication of his children, of which there is one, and which I am the only qualified candidate. So he is conveying another way that he reaches out to help us. Chawa, a name which will be revealed later in this story, not yet, but it is presented as man's helper and supporter, the one who assists and serves as a succor who rescues, aids, and renews. And her name reveals that she was outspoken, openly sharing her thoughts and intentions, which is not only what the name Chawa means, it is appropriate within the relationship. There are lots of religious people that says Chawa means life giver. No, it doesn't. Che. And Chaya in the feminine would be life and life giver. It's not Chaya. It's Chawa. Chawa means to express one's thoughts and intentions. But let's not get ahead of God's story. Based upon what follows, Yahweh would initially try to entertain Adam with animals, or at the very least, God would enliven their relationship by celebrating life together. This is really a tender moment. One of my very, very favorites, because I'm tenderhearted. I just love life. And the idea that our eternity could be spent with Yahweh exposing the other life forms that he's created on other planets for us to enjoy, and that we could walk amongst the giants like dinosaurs with him and fly alongside of eagles and swim with the reverberation of the song of the humpback whale is not only intriguing, but I read into this story based upon the narrative that Yahweh enabled Adam and the animals to actually communicate together. And I think he will do that for us in eternity. And I even think God's going to go so far as to say, all right, here's the alphabet. It's a three-dimensional alphabet, a DNA. And just as I have created animals, I'm going to give you a challenge, and we can do this together. And, you know, my great taunt of the Almighty, I say it in love, is I want to best the platypus. My platypus is going to also have wings and going to fly. So we're going to have a little competition. I know it's pretty silly to think you're going to have a competition against God, but that's what he wants. He wants us to celebrate life together. So beyond all these insights, there is another reason behind Yahweh's willingness to act on our interest that is here for us to see. And for there to be genuine love, mankind would need to experience and explore every dimension. And for there to be a meaningful choice, the option of other than God would have to be exceedingly appealing. So when the alternative is Yahweh, spending time with someone else would have to be really alluring and rewarding. Therefore, woman. Now, I haven't told my wife, a little pillow talk here, but I told my wife, last night, listen, if there's not going to be love and heaven, I'm coming back to earth. So she's giggling over on the side, but he made the alternative really appealing, adding to the brilliance of our creator's plan. The relationship between the man and the woman was conceived to be complementary. By offering Adam the option to be with Chawa, he would not be avoiding God, but instead, if handled correctly, he would come to better appreciate the nature of the covenant family that Yahweh had intended for us all along. God's really smart. Also interesting in this regard, neged means to correspond, which is to be in conformity and in agreement. This suggests that an affinity with the purpose, Ruach Kodesh, who brings us into conformity with Yah's instructions. So when we are born anew by the Ruach, because of the benefits, if you will, of of Pesach, Matzah, Bekorah. Pesach, we become immortal. We enter the doorway to life that Dodo opened for us. On Matzah, we are perfected such that our guilt is removed and taken into Sheol. And on Bekorah, it is Yahweh showing us that his firstborn son, his Bekor, led the way for there to be Bekorah, additional children in Yahweh's family, signing our adoption paper so we could be enriched and empowered. And there was the longest time that I actually didn't have a full appreciation. I mean, no one did, so I'm not apologizing for this. And I'm also sharing with you that something that has bothered some people here very recently, but one of the things that Yahweh wanted to accomplish when we began our collaboration together is he wanted to take a man, in this case, a goy, because the Nakar is an observant foreigner. He wanted to take a goy and say, all right, this fellow, since he's going to be capable of reading the Torah and prophets, making appropriate translations, accurate translations of my words, and then comprehending them and deducing insights that had never been contemplated in the last 3,000 years, some of them 3,500 years, then it was there for you all the time. And so rather than doing a data dump where Yahweh said, okay, here's the Torah. I'm going to eventually write it inside of you. I'll just give you a sneak preview. I'll write it inside of you. You'll have the answer for everything. That wasn't the point he wanted to make. He wanted to let his wayward children know that every answer that I have shared with you and that I will continue to share with you has been available for anyone with an open mind and a willing to invest the time with a disciplined approach to evidence and reason to find. And so we have learned together on the job. So if you're going to learn, then that means that what you know tomorrow will be beyond what you know today. And along the way, while nothing fundamental has ever changed and my understanding of God, I have, through learning, developed a clearer understanding of certain things. So this happens to be an example, and it's an example because the rebellion against me is this convoluted idea that the spiritual mother, mom, has been neglected and that they are now the voice of mom appreciating her for the first time. It's utterly ridiculous and there's no basis for it, but that doesn't stop people from believing myths. And so long ago, over these past 23 years, I was the first person probably ever to recognize that Ruach was a feminine noun. And so I referred to the set apart spirit as she. I think I'm the first person to ever do that. I was the first person to actually talk about the role the Ruach had in creation. I was the first person to recognize that in the Moed Mikre, the Isha that we are encouraged to approach and come into the presence of is a feminine manifestation of God's fiery light. I was the first to explain that when God said he made us man and woman in man's image, he made us. That this means that Yahweh had maternal and paternal characteristic. Now, he always presents himself as our father. And he never explicitly says that the set-apart spirit is mom, but she has, well, this aspect of Yahweh is given a feminine name, just like Torah's a feminine noun, Bereth is a feminine noun, Zeruah, of which three men lived in that role, is a feminine noun. And so I was the first to do that. I was the first to tell you that Yahweh's name is actually feminine. By the way, the only name that the Ruach has is Yahweh. And so I spent more time devoted to the idea of talking about the role of Yahweh's spirit and how she was woven into aspects of God's story than anyone in human history. And it permeates all the way through my books. And sometimes as you try to do these things, you might apply more than is really there. This is an example. If I were to read to you what I wrote some years ago, I said that the Ruach Kodesh, was set apart spirit, who is not even mentioned here, by the way. It's just I'm extrapolating it from, Chawa being feminine, is responsible somehow for our perfection before God. And I spoke of a garment of luminosity, and there's a reference in the prophecy to a garment like this, and I just described it to the set-apart spirit. It made sense. But I'm not sure that's totally accurate. You see, once you come to understand what Dode did, and I didn't see this until maybe 2 to 3 years ago, when Dode opened the door to life by serving as the Pesach El, using his body, his Bashar, to serve in that way, we automatically become immortal. That means that when this life ends, we are transformed into light energy, which is an eternal form of existence. But you see, what I had missed, because I couldn't fathom initially that Yahweh would have allowed his beloved son, Dode, to take our guilt on his nephesh soul and take it into Sheol and deposit it there. I couldn't imagine the Father would allow that until I retranslated all of the Mizmor. And it's over and over again that says that Father and Son, Dode and Yahweh, were in full agreement that this was the best plan. And then I read with fresh eyes the 22nd Mizmor and the 88th Mizmor, when Dode expresses that he's experiencing crucifixion as the Passover lamb, and that he's experiencing separation in Sheol, which means he's fulfilling matzah. And all of a sudden you have, whoa, this is the single most important discovery relative to our relationship with God, relative to getting off of this blue marble spinning in the darkness of space alive. There is no more profound truth than Father and Son fulfilled Pesach, Matzah, and Makorim. But once you know what Dode did on Matzah, where he allowed our guilt to be slathered on him, his soul, so that he could take it to Sheol to deposit it there, never to be seen again. You don't need a garment of luminosity. It's done. We're perfected. Our guilt's gone. See how profound that is? Now, I am projecting, because it's the most logical conclusion from the evidence, that it was the set-apart spirit that retrieved Dode's nephesh once matzah had been completed from Sheol and escorted Dode's nephesh back to Shamaim. I think that was the mechanism. It's not stated. But he is reintroduced to the light, and the light can be his father. It can be the set-apart spirit going along the way. But this is really the heart and soul of Yahweh's approach and who I am. I've spent the last 23 years of my life, anywhere from 12 to 14 hours a day, 6 to 7 days a week, writing these 35 books, coming to know Yahweh and what he was offering, coming to perceive these insights so that I could share them with you today. And that Yahweh wanted you to know that the process was diligent learning, chokmah. The whole process of disciplined discernment, examining the evidence, considering it from Yahweh's perspective, and rendering not only a translation, but an understanding of it and insights from it. And that by doing so, it would open the door to God's home. Dode celebrated this very event in the eighth Mashal, where Chokmah is the thing that he prizes, because Doed was among the most brilliant men, probably the most brilliant man who ever lived. He's celebrating wisdom, which is a skillful application of good judgment. And so through that, we can learn. There are things that I'm still learning from Doed. There are things that I have come to know that Doed missed. We stand upon those who came before us. And we learn along the way. This makes it work. Yeah, work. Yahweh loves work. You know why Yahweh loves work? Because when it happens this way, as opposed to a data dump, we can appreciate where we've come. We can know that we made the effort to make a difference. We can know when we approach Yahweh and at the end of this life, and we know that we gave it our all, that we genuinely made this commitment and worked at it. And we're devoted and steadfast to this cause. And these are the marvelous results of it. We come to know by studying his word and thinking about it. Now, God, I'm sure, made it easier for me with the application of his seven ruach. That's what the choder has been given because, well, frankly, we're in a position where there is no alternative. There is no second chance. I either succeed with Yahweh's support, his Izir, or there is no homecoming. There is no family reunion. There is no Shavuah or Teruah harvest. It is all for naught. The world cascades into nothingness. God does not return. The earth is destroyed. Satan wins. So Yahweh did apply his seven spirits so that I could share this message with you, so that you could understand what I've learned from Yahweh. Isn't that a tremendous gift? Isn't it worth celebrating why we need to work together? And in this way, yes, Yahweh's set apart spirit has been my Azir, my helper, my supporter, all the way along the way. But you know something? Never once. And I've been doing this for 23 years. Man, I get up before the sun every day and I go to my study to make a contribution to Yahweh's mission and his family and to herald this message on behalf of Doed, his son. And I do it well past sunset every day. You know, there's not a single insight, not one, that I have deduced apart from Yahweh's words, from those found in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. This isn't a game of spirituality. You know, this Christian myth that the Spirit will somehow fill you and give you these answers, and did you celebrate the Spirit? I mean, no. Discernment is work. Chokma is effort. You come to conclusions by studying what his words mean and then forming conclusions about them and then relating other aspects of his story so that you understand them, and then you can deduce insights once you understand, like we're sharing now. This is how it works. It isn't a game. It isn't a data dump. It's work. And that's the way that it should be. And that is the way it's going to be in eternity. That's the way it was in the garden. So, we will ultimately become more like God and equivalent to him, because he is going to transform us into spiritual beings. That doesn't mean he's going to make us the set-apart spirit. Set-apart spirit is an aspect of Yahweh's nature. We are just going to be spiritual beings. Our soul is going to be empowered and energized and capable of entering the fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh dimension. Now, as a humorous aside, and perhaps a jab to Christians by combining the primary and secondary meaning of bad. God said that it was bad, estranging and separating, to carry a cross. I find that. There's just so many words that you look up the full meaning and, yep, that's what bad says. It's bad says it's estranging and separated to carry a cross. The whole Christian cross thing is just such a piece of foolology, and it's such an irritant to God. Can you imagine that you're going to say, I'm going to worship a God on a stick, a tortured God on a stick. That's going to be my symbol. I'm going to honor God by nailing him to a stick and keeping him there. Folks, out of your mind. Well, and if that were not enough to get our attention, the tertiary meaning of bad is branch. And that is the Torah's most enduring symbol of David. Because when we connect with him, we live. We blossom, we grow, we become fruitful. And by listening to him, the doorway to heaven is opened. Now, before we leave this profound declaration and conclude this, the fifth episode of In the Garden, and I realize I have gone on a whole lot of what you might think are tangents, but the purpose of this program is not just to read what I have written to you. It's to share what I have come to learn, to give you the gift that Yahweh has shared with me such that you can capitalize on it. You know, when we look at the things that are beautiful in life, a beautiful sunrise or sunset, a waterfall, a lovely rainbow, a beautiful child, whatever it is, when that gift, that vision, that experience is shared, it is so much more rewarding. I had a dear friend of mine who was visiting Africa, and today she couldn't wait to share the pictures and the experience that she's had. And we had a marvelous moment sharing the joy of all of that together, because sharing is caring, as they say. So this is what I was conveying here. God routinely refers to himself, by the way, as our helper, the one who shares with us. So this isn't a pejorative. In truth, the one who serves, the one who rescues, renews, and restores is often the unsung hero and the greater contributor in the story. Now, based upon which follows, and I'm going to, after I read this to you, we're going to do as we've done in the past. We're going to end our program at this point, and then we're going to return to this with our next episode. But I like to leave you with the words of Yahweh as opposed to my understanding or conclusions regarding them. So based on which follows, I suspect that before creating Chawa, Yahweh explored the other favorable option, which was to spend more time with Adam. Therefore, now Yahweh Almighty, who fashioned and formed out of the elements of the earth every living animal of the expansive environment, which means the area outside of the garden, in addition to every bird of the sky, brought them to Adam in order to see what he would call them and how he would greet and welcome them. Ma, kara, lahu. Therefore, everything for the benefit of the relationship that Adam approached and designated, called out to and encountered, that became the name and reputation of that living soul. Oh, what a wonderful place we will have to resume when we continue with the Yahweh blog in the, yes, it'll be the sixth episode of In the Garden. I can't wait to share it with you. Looking forward to our next time together. I am Craig Wynn.